Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 podcast in which three random guys read science fiction novels, then subject you to our more or less fascinating thoughts about them. I am joined, as ever, by Kevin and Barry, only one of whom is probably tampered with the past to bring about this reality.
All probably. I mean,
they're all version control. This is the worst case scenario reality, by the way.
Of course. Yes, this is the stress testing for how bad can things get.
Right before they snap.
Yay. So anyway, today we are discussing Version Control by Dexter Palmer, read by January Lavoie. Kevin, would you give us a reading of the back of the book, please?
Indeed. Rebecca Wright has reclaimed her life, finding her way out of her grief and depression following a personal tragedy years ago. She spends her days working in customer support for the internet dating site where she first met her husband. But she has a strange, persistent sense that everything around her is somewhat off-kilter. She constantly feels as if she has walked into a room and forgotten what she intended to do there. On TV, the president seems to be the wrong person in the wrong place. Her dreams are full of disquiet. Meanwhile, her husband's decade-long dedication to his invention, the causality violation device, which he would greatly prefer you not call a time machine, has effectively stalled his career and made him a laughingstock in the physics community, but he may be closer to success than either of them knows or can possibly imagine. Version Control is about a possible near future, but it's also about the way we live now. It's about smartphones and self-driving cars and what we believe about the people we meet on the internet. It's about a couple, Rebecca and Philip, who have experienced a tragedy and about how they help and fail to help each other through it. Emotionally powerful and stunningly visionary, Version Control will alter the way you see your future and your present.
Awesome. So, what did everybody think? Barry?
I really enjoyed this book. As you know, in terms of the time travel books I've read, this is probably one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Yes, I also enjoyed it. And it was definitely one of the more cerebral and kind of subtle time travel books for sure.
Right.
It did have a deft hand.
And very few Morlocks.
Dang it.
Could have used some Morlocks. Now, I thought this was actually kind of a powerful book. At first, I had a little bit of trouble getting into it because the characters are very detailed, and detailed characters can really get on your nerves at first.
Yeah, they're not all awesome people.
No.
Well, especially when some are as deeply defective as they are.
Exactly. And also, there are a lot of characters, because Dexter Palmer goes into the minds of practically everybody we meet, including the security guards at the front desk.
Is that Winston and
Spivey, I believe.
Spivey, yes.
Yeah, but all of them emerge as sort of interesting and full-fledged characters, and I kind of got to like them towards the end, and just the overall sort of tapestry of the story really drew me along. Dexter Palmer is, among other things, a James Joyce scholar, and a lot of this is sort of a James Joyce type of story, where you are going along people's streams of consciousness, although it's not a stream of consciousness book. It's just very carefully from various people's perspectives, and it switches from place to place. There's a book called Timescape by Gregory Benford, which is the closest I've read to this, sort of blending science and multiple realities and this literary quality. Also, there's a more mainstream thing called Rabbit Holes. It's a play and also was a movie by David Lindsay Abaire, which also involves family loss and multiple universes.
Two great tastes that go great together.
Thank you for that. All right. So anyway, before somebody changes the past and makes this all unhappen, it's
too late.
Time to move to our discussion section. All right, we're back for a thorough discussion of Version Control by Dexter Palmer. So we began as usual with favorite scenes. Barry, I think you had a favorite scene.
I did.
Well, that I was just going to ask.
Okay. You verified the existence of it?
Anyway, this has been Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi.
And we're done for the afternoon. No. I think my favorite scene is sort of near the end of the book when Rebecca decides, after playing the avatar on lovability for a number of times, which I really like the concept of using the avatar to keep people, you know, hooked into staying on the dating site to sort of, you know, keep them, stringing them along.
That was definitely sort of like one of those morally, like, you're like, wow, she's really looking the other way there.
Well, and even the fact that, you know, what is it, Gaia, the director of the program, basically has her people lift Avery Brooks's voice, you know, the voice of Captain Sisko, the sexiest sounding, you know, captain alive.
Right.
And they're like, well, we couldn't get him to actually give us the phonemes, but, you know, we just picked him up off of Deep Space Nine.
Yep. Fair use. Ha ha.
I don't think that's fair use.
Well, yeah, I don't think so either. But the sad thing is, I'm like, well, let's see, I guess you can train, you know, something that would do that with these as an input. And
oh, yeah.
You know, so she's playing the avatar for a number of months or years. I don't know how long that goes on, but she finally decides after one of the video chats with one of the members that she's like, screw it, let's meet.
Right.
And then she basically goes over and meets the dupe, I guess, or not the dupe, the...
Mark.
Mark. It's not Mark.
Recipient.
Yes, the Mark. Not Mark, the Mark.
Yes, that's what I said.
Yes, I also parsed it that way at first.
Mark.
Keep marking, my friend.
Mark. I'm just telling myself
And the Mark basically responds with, I basically choose not to believe you, or, you know, I'm still having a great time.
Oh, yeah, she believes her, but yeah. Just says, but...
Well, there's some disbelief at the beginning, but then she's like, well, you know, you haven't ruined my day or anything.
Right. I just said where I was going to be.
Yeah. For some reason, that scene just really stuck out to me.
It
was interesting, just the reaction and, you know, and Rebecca's confusion as to, like... Sort of like her plan was like foiled by someone not caring.
Well, part of it is that fed into one of the themes of the book, I think, where they were talking about, you know, are you your data or is your data you, and, you know, that kind of thing. And
stop reducing my flesh to data, as the Dakota secessionist said.
Yes.
Well, that was sort of interesting because the person that ran this dating service and was justifying herself by saying, Gaia, yes. She was justifying her, frankly, creepy actions by saying, oh, it's just data. You know, we're not actually harming people. We're just having their data interact.
We never use their name, but we'll use their, you know, their data to describe them and use it for or against them.
Right. So it's kind of like there was a point in the book where she starts saying some, you know, questionable things, like, you know, about, well, this, you know, Rachel group does such and such, and then the main character, what's her name, Rebecca, was sort of like, and then she's like, oh, let me stop you there. I see you're uncomfortable. You know, I don't actually say, I'm not racist. I'm just saying that this subcategory of the data has these attributes. Ha ha!
So, nationalists love X.
Yeah, so... Yeah. That whole using the avatars was kind of a brilliant way to keep them on. You're right. But it was like, that was like definitely one of the points in the book where I was just like, oh, wow, they're really veering into sort of like the unethical territory there for sure. Or not. Because at first I was thinking, oh, they're going to keep people in by making a new VR thing where you can date virtually or something. And that's why I thought it was leading towards that. And then she's like, oh, no, we're just stringing them along with these like fake, you know.
Yeah. Well, that also led in, you know, to the... You know, using avatars for presidents, you know, that sort of popped up on the video screens at dinner tables and, like that, too. It's like they're using that sort of same thing for...
Exactly. So we first notice that something weird is going on when they mention at the beginning of the book that the president introduces almost every show on TV.
Right. And not just like, you know, here's my generic Nova introduction. It's like every episode of every show on every channel has a custom introduction, which may not be unique. There are a lot of reused ones with some names changed, but he still does it. And you're like... Right.
And today on Days of Our Lives, Todd will cheat on Mary. Enjoy the show.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's, you know, that's, you know, there's some of the reviews had mentioned that, oh, this is a very Philip K. Dick kind of book. And that's definitely one of the things that jumped out for me, that it's like, oh, that sounds like a very Philip K. Dick kind of thing that would happen.
Right. And at first I thought the story was just going into a very surreal territory. But actually they came up with this explanation that they actually have banks and banks of people doing VR impersonations of the president, and then they can control the president's popularity by carefully tweaking his appearance in different ways.
Right. So they kind of like everyone's doing motion capture in these like underground phone banks.
Right.
And then, and the thing is, it's not like he just shows up on the TV, it's like you'll be having a call with your friend. Suddenly he'll pop in, interrupt the call and say, huh, I noticed you were talking about, you know, you seem like you were having some questions about this kind of policy the government was having. So I just want to talk to you about that for a second. And it yes. seems sort of creepily topical at the moment. But
also he will appear on your dinner table and occasionally buy you dessert.
Oh, right. He's like, here, you know, you deserve it.
Where do I get hired to wear the Cheeto helmet?
And the weirdest thing was that, you know, the reaction of everybody was, oh, God.
Not again.
This is so boring.
So it's almost like you get overload. It's too much. It's overload. And
right. Not this is the weirdest thing ever.
Right. It's like people, it's definitely like an accepted and normal thing. And so, yeah, that's, again, a part that feels very like a PKD book.
Yeah. So Philip has been attempting to build a time machine.
And it's not a time machine.
Sorry. Causality violation device. But to his mild disappointment, it turns out that when he turns it on for the first time and establishes a fixed point in space and time, nothing happens. It's as though the universe is consistent and no changes have ever been made to it.
Right. Well, yeah, because in the story, he's like, okay, we can't do certain things, but what we can do is create a wormhole. And so if you create a fixed end point, you know, starting now, and that becomes the point in the past that you can travel back to. They got a lot of funding from, I don't remember who, some rich kid that had a lot of money.
Yeah, not even Elon Musk at this point. This is like, a brat.
Yeah, like Elon Musk Jr. or something like that.
Exactly.
And so he's all hyped up about it. He's like, I'm going to fund you forever. And they turn it on and then nothing happens. And he's like, okay, I'm pulling your funding. And they're like, what are you talking about? You just gave us all this money. We made this thing and we haven't even done the research yet. And he says, well, you know, some dinosaur or something would have popped out of there by now, you know, because this is the other side, right? So obviously, like, it didn't work in the future if it didn't pop out right now.
So you wanted that to happen? Well, no, but it would have been cool.
Right. So then they got funding from the shadow government agency that I forget what the term was.
But DAPA, I think.
It's a play on DARPA, I think.
Yeah, right. He's like, DARPA is too above board now, so there's the new one, DAPA.
Right. So from their perspective, the time machine isn't working. So they keep on sending this robot back and forth through it, and occasionally people, apparently, we learn at the end.
Mostly by accident.
And I suspect that if we went through and read very carefully, we might find more inconsistencies than, you know, I was really looking for on the first read.
Right. So that the main thing is they structure it in a way that they never say, hey, this actually works. Everyone just says, this is never working. We keep doing these dumb tests and they're all negative results.
Right.
And then about 3/4 of the way through, maybe 2/3 of the way through, we find out it's been working the entire time, but that it works, as you know, the name implies, version control, whereas the person that goes through is changed by the event. So they didn't know that anything changed, but it caused a change.
Which, yeah, is the thing that always drives me nuts in science fiction movies about time travel. I love time travel stuff, but they always have the original person remembering what happened, and that couldn't possibly work. If they change the rest of the universe and you're a product of that universe, then, you know, unless there's...
But timelines, Steve, timelines.
And this is why Winston, the security guard, got it right the first time.
Exactly.
Very early on in the book. Would you like a cricket shake?
So I guess the interesting thing was they mentioned things. It's like our world, but there are a few things that are just a little off. You know, Reagan is on the $20 bill.
I actually had to sort of stop and double check that Reagan wasn't on the $20 bill. It seemed so plausible.
Did I ever pay you back that Gipper buck?
Yeah, at the beginning they mentioned that, you know, that's what I mean by this was like very subtle, because there's lots of clues along the way and there's lots of things that say, oh, something's different. But at first you think this is just a different universe slightly, not that this was our universe that got altered.
Right. Because, I remember we were talking and trying to figure out which year this was in.
Right. And they mentioned some reference points in the past, and you kind of can estimate that. I wanted to say it was about now, I think, is when it was supposed to be.
Where they established the fixed end of the wormhole?
I think that's when the next part was, because I thought they said they established the fixed end in like the 2000s somewhere. I forget now.
Right.
Like the mid to late 2000s.
So probably a few years ago was the fixed end of the wormhole.
Right. And so So right.
I couldn't help but wonder when they first started talking about that, that they actually were like had like an off by one error, and that the fixed end was the one they were in the future for somehow, and they're sort of dragging along like a, you know, flapping back end or something. It's like the robot just managed to crawl its way back into the device or into the chamber and survive the experience.
Right, so they basically had the idea of, okay, we have a robot that goes in, it stays there for an hour, a robot that goes in, it stays for about an hour, and basically, like, look, we can just check the time sink, and, you know, it worked in the original Star Trek series, but it works now.
But, yeah, it turns out reality does emerge afterwards.
Right, so basically, they there's a whole section where they talk about, you know, how version control systems work and how you can either do a lock of the entire source code, make a change and check it back in, or lots of people can work on it at once and then the system tries to merge all the changes unless there's a conflict. At the beginning, Rebecca is saying how nothing seems quite right. There's a lot of things that seem off, but, you know, she couldn't really figure out what it was. And then they mention during the book, there's like this new disorder where people, you know, will just suddenly go in to their therapist and they say like something's changed, or I just made some edits yesterday on my, you know, my lovability profile or whatever, and now I know I did it, but that's not me, even though it says it is and I remember that stuff, but it's something wrong. And so there's this like this new disorder that they're saying, oh, it's because of, you know, information and whatever. They gave some reason why they thought it was, but the real reason we know is because the mergings that are happening with the universe, and so somehow people psychologically pick up some discordant like response, even though they don't consciously understand what's going on or something.
Would you like to upgrade your lovability account to a gold status?
That was pretty chilling.
Yeah.
You know, right. Having that be a common psychological disorder was sort of a neat touch. But yeah, there were a lot of things that just were close enough to reality that it gave you the hint that this was sort of this strange world. So it was kind of inducing the same kind of feeling that it's describing in there. So, for example, there are people that are kind of talking about eating insects, but I don't know of anybody that basically goes down to Crickets R Us and, you know, gets cricket powder.
Well, I think near the end of the book, the cricket says protein becomes a much more common thing, which,
right,
to my understanding, is actually happening today. But,
well, it's because of the reptilians.
Well, right. All of these things that, you know, he's introducing as signs of an alien universe are things that I've heard about. And so it all seemed just plausible enough to me that this might have started and actually be a normal thing, and I just don't know about it yet because I'm me.
Well, right. They do talk about, it seems like a lot of things have been advanced a few years.
Right.
You know, like self-driving cars are more common now, and
auto insurance is much more complicated.
Yes, which is, yeah, obviously things that people go, okay, this is going to be difficult. Who do you sue? You know, the people who own the code here and that sort of thing. But, right, so sort of like the pivotal moment in the book is the wife of the scientist.
Rebecca.
Rebecca is, you know, she has drinking issues. And so there's a lot of very, like, personal, like, internal dialogue where she's talking about during the book is like, this is how you know, make a mimosa. First you, like, you know, do this and you pour in the orange juice up to the top and you drink it down, then you do it again, and then
that makes it
do
a breakfast
it again
drink,
right? And then, you know, it'd be a shame to waste all that, you know, fizzy stuff because the fizz will go down, so you finish it off by lunch. And then you know, so there's a lot of kind of like internally justified monologues that are kind of like half justified where it's like, well,
Sounds perfectly normal to me.
Right. There's several parts in the book about that. But at one point, her son gets involved in sort of a fight with a bully. And so even though it's not his fault, he has to stay in detention. And so she has to come after work and pick him up. And she's, you know, basically smashed. And she gets more smashed because she knows she's going to have to deal with the principal. And so she shows up. And at this point, she has a self-driving car. So she's like, it'll be fine.
Right. And 99% of the time she'd be right.
Right. And so they kind of walk through this like edge case where they're coming back, and because of some versioning issues that people have hacked their cars, and because of the way the system works, like,
I have to be able to play Pokemon while the car's driving itself.
Exactly. Yeah. The car,
all of which sounds terrifyingly plausible.
Oh yeah, it's totally plausible where it's like, oh, there's a game and people like and then they decide for some reason to disable it because of some safety issue or something.
Yeah.
So people are like, well, I want to play it. So they, you know, internet instructions on how to, like, you know,
root your car.
Basically, yeah, root your car and, like,
and
roll back the version.
Stay at the previous version.
But then you still say you're at the new version, so it doesn't try to update it. And then that, because of some syncing issue.
No one here at this table's ever done that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know. So anyway, you know.
Not on my car.
Yeah. I think I would be a little paranoid about something like that. But
yet.
So they talk about how that's probably what causes this big accident that happens where all these cars sort of shut down or freak out and sort of collide. So they have this thing, which sounds all too plausible, where her self-driving car basically says, I'm going to pull off to the side, but I'm probably going to crash. If you'd like to take manual control, just grab the wheel. And she sort of instinctively grabs the wheel. And then
told me to.
Yeah. And kind of is like, oh crap. And now it's like, oh, you've taken control and it's your fault now. which you can imagine would be exactly like a lawyer response to something.
It's like a liability airbag that pops up at the last minute to save the company from liability.
Right. All I could think about was like some sort of, you know, self-driving car version of the Dukes of Hazzard. They're sort of mid-flight off the ramp and the car says, would you like to take control? And, you know, Bo or Luke is like, okay.
Yeah. What does that mean? All right.
This feeds into that crossover episode between Dukes of Hazzard and Knight Rider that we were working on.
That really should exist.
Two good old boys that never meant no harm.
Maybe they come
and
up,
a man who does not exist.
They show up with car and
anyway, before we turn this into the Dukes of Hazzard kit crossover Nightmare show, which honestly would be a better show in every way than the one we currently do.
The Knight of Hazzard.
Oh God.
The Knights of Hazzard.
So anyway, that's another show even. So anyway, God, brain reset. So they get in this accident and the son is basically killed, you know, from this impact. The car rolls over and just, you know, bad things happen. So, you know, there's a huge downward spiral after that. You know, their marriage already was not very good, but they right.
And Rebecca was only sort of hanging on beforehand.
Right. The husband was kind of constantly at work all the time. She was sort of like, you know, just at home drinking and not really, you know, she's doing her job. That was a call-in from home job, I think. So it was, yeah, like you said, she was just sort of just barely hanging on. So then after that, things get worse. You know, it kind of comes to a head where she walks in on her husband and like his grad student or something.
That was after her awesome shopping experience.
Oh, right. Her
it wasn't Barney's. It was
her big data shopping experience.
But they said, oh, yes, don't even worry about it. We already know exactly what your size is. We've imaged you from 15 angles. And yeah, this is what you want.
Right. And so that seemed to be another implication that, oh, you know, history had changed like between the time she had gotten the dress and the time that she tried to wear it. But, you know.
Ah, that's clever. I hadn't thought of that.
That was my interpretation.
She did claim after she tried it on for the first time that it didn't fit properly and something had obviously changed in the universe. But I didn't pick up on that until much later in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was sort of like the way she described it not fitting here and fitting there. It's like, oh, that's because she went running after the change and
right.
so forth. But so, yeah, at that point, she goes out with her friend, gets completely smashed after she had actually stopped drinking for a while, I think. Mm-hmm. Her friend convinces her to go into the time machine and basically say, fuck you, time machine. You're the, you know.
That was supposed to be her cathartic moment.
Yeah,
to,
her know, cathartic moment.
Give her husband or ex-husband the, you know, the finger by violating his violation
device. Yeah, she's
device.
Like, I'm going to, you know, go inside your time machine, just like other things that might have happened. And so... That's when part two happens. That's when we actually find out, yes, it's working. You know,
I texted out, something interesting just happened.
Yeah, yeah. So she goes in, she does this thing, then she comes out, and immediately the subtle change there was that her friend was still dating that guy, right?
Well, her friend was still dating the guy and was now known as Catherine, not Kate.
Oh, I didn't pick up on
that. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that on the name part either, but
and the guards at the front desk referred to the boss as she rather than
okay,
he.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up either. So then and then you find out she goes home, her son's there, and you're like, okay, big change happened. Her son didn't die. You don't know why.
Right, but Philip isn't.
But now Philip's dead. And so and the woman who cheated with her husband is now the one running it, and they're friends now.
Right, they're best friends.
Yeah. So then we follow this other sort of parallel chain of things happening, including the part where, you know, her friend tearfully, you know, she, you know, she's like, my husband cheated on me. Did you know? Did you know that happened? And right. It's like, of course not. Of course not. Don't you believe me? And then the reverse happens.
Right.
And then you see the internal monologue of, yes, she did know, but she totally denied knowing. And
right. So there's some sort of conservation of karma or something.
Oh, and that happens, I think, in all of the different timelines. There was sort of an interesting parallelism going on between the different universes.
Conservation of dialogue.
Sure, why not?
It was easier to just copy and paste that dialogue into the next chapter.
The version control.
The events must occur. But it really doesn't matter who's involved.
I think there should be sort of like a fans edition of the book that you know, releases some sort of repository that shows all the changes to the document.
That would be awesome.
It must have been hard editing this book.
It's just like, no, there's an inconsistency here. Yeah.
It's intentional. Thank you.
It's like there's all these highlights. This is supposed to be this. I would love to see actually if there is some kind of, you know, metadata that was done behind the scenes of this is from, you know, this change. Okay, this change happened here. This change happened here.
Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that, you know, in its office, it's sort of like the conspiracy theorists, you know, crazy board with yarn linking this and this.
So then towards the end, they're kind of guessing maybe this is actually how it's working, that, you know, this version control stuff is happening and you don't remember the changes. And then things are definitely like just the whole, like the Dakota, like secessionists are kind of amping up. They're like declaring martial law. There's all sorts of crazy things. And then like this,
all of which seemed terrifyingly plausible.
Right. Especially because I was like, you know, I was reading the news about the Dakota pipeline and stuff. And then they're talking about the Dakota secessionists. And you're like, And then,
yeah, this is a,
it's not a big, it's not
book.
A big leap to think this was actually like the real world for a few minutes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so, you know, then they get even into more of the shadow government stuff where they're talking about, you know, how the president shows up and then how you'd mentioned that earlier, because all these people are playing the president. We'll just tweak him to look like he's, you know, kind of getting sick. You know, we'll make sure he doesn't get reelected. And
also, most of the actual functions of the government are at that point being handled by an AI.
Right.
Wait, and was this the last book we read?
Yeah, I was unclear if that was the case or not, or whether it was just...
They actually said that.
Well, they mentioned that as a possible thing, you know, as some wacky, like, theory when things get reset at the very, very end, but I don't...
Yeah, but before that, when Gaia is talking, mm-hmm. she's explaining that, oh, actually, you know, everything's an avatar, and it doesn't really matter because all of the actual things that are being done by artificial intelligences.
Okay. Yeah. I think I missed that little connection there, because at the very end they go, you know, maybe the government's run by an AI construct or something crazy like that.
And right.
Like, at some point, this is the part I was a little unclear about, is she has this dream. She's talking to her dad and like, he's like, hey, why don't you go see Jehovah? He's sitting in the room over there. And at first I think I missed the, this is a dream for a bit. And so I was like, wait, what happened? And I'm like, okay, this must be a dream. Like, unless it totally veered without any like warning.
That was quite a deviation.
And so, you know, he's like, all these people do stupid, selfish things when they could do something awesome. And so I was trying to figure out whether she was just having some wacky dream or whether they were trying to, like, you know, make some implication of, oh no, there is some like spiritual thing going on and God's sort of like talking to you through your dreams or something. And
yeah, there is a dream world also with Sean. It's still right. Sort of weirdly in contact with an imaginary version of Philip.
Yeah,
and,
all
and
the
his
time.
Mother. Yeah.
What?
And his mother.
And
in,
his
in
mother.
The alternate timeline.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
All of whom seem to be from Axe Cop.
That's right.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, today I defeated the, you know, criminals and put them all in jail and then, you know, beheaded the dragon.
Right, exactly.
With my axe.
Right. Sort of like, I give him a choice. Do you want the cuffs or do you want the axe? Like,
yeah. Was it an axe? I forget.
I think it was a knife.
It was a knife.
It's like, you could choose, but you'll wish you had chosen the cuffs. Like,
one hand that has cuffs and the other hand is actually a knife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you're right.
It makes it very hard to scratch your nose.
Every night it was sort of like, he would just have his normal conversation with his dad talking about stuff. And so, yeah, that part, they didn't really go into a lot of detail, but it did seem like either he was going crazy or, you know, wish fulfillment or something was going on.
Like, well, I mean, even Rebecca seemed to be having like, you know, her tripping balls moment with, you know, her kid's art project or something.
Right.
You right. Know, so, yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure. I didn't think that fit into the whole time travel thing, but I thought it sort of stacked nicely on it.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is, I don't think we really know how many times reality changed because the number of people who have stepped through wasn't really
They
wasn't really counted or described every time.
At least, not hundreds. Because I think what they were saying is any time the robot went back, it might have changed. And the way the dream worked, they kind of said, oh, you know, God created time travels for humans to fix all the random errors that crop up, you know, in different timelines. And
but as it turns out, we can't trust you to do it correctly.
and so I thought what was going to happen is she was going to have the sun come up with this, you know, the perfect world, and then she would put the sun into the into the time machine.
That would have been
a great
idea.
And he would reset it. And I was like, oh, look, it's like that other crappy book we read, but a less irritating version of it, which is kind of what I was thinking halfway through is like, oh, this is like, you know, the parallel universe book, but, you know, an actual good version of it. So, of course, that means this one will not be as popular as that one. But
this is not a fringe timeline.
But then at some point, I was a little confused as to, because it seemed like suddenly she like had this realization and she had kind of like had some epiphany and gone half crazy, and she was just like, well, soon things are going to be different, so whatever. And so I was a little unclear whether she had intended to go back and make sure that she didn't make it. You know, I assume she went back with the intention of saving her husband,
right?
And you were thinking, oh crap, she's just going to reset it to some other horrible earlier version,
right? That would have been sort of a horrifying thing of, oh, okay. Occasionally,
it'll
just get stuck in oscillation between two points.
And so, yeah, part of me thought, crap, it's going to end up that way, and that's going to be really depressing. And then, so it ends up that she actually says, if I go back in time, why don't I just have him, don't send him to school that day, right?
Right.
And so, but that's not what happens.
Right.
You know, she goes back, and she takes one for the team this time. She's the one who dies instead of Philip or her kid. And so, you know, part of you is thinking, well, why didn't she just not send him to school that day? Or maybe it's that kind of other time travel thing where there's some fate, not really fate, but there's, you know, it's going to recur sometime.
It seems pretty clear that what happened was that she had to, I mean,
she had to take the wheel in that situation to do something because she couldn't get out of the accident.
But it's not like a quantum leap. She doesn't get to take the place of the previous person.
Right.
She might have actually gone to coffee with the previous version of herself.
Right.
And the previous version of herself doesn't really fully remember it afterwards, just remembers that she's supposed to do something different, for example.
I had coffee with myself this morning.
Good job, Barry.
What else did you do with yourself?
Don't answer that question, please.
Thank you for visiting with the Time Ship Relativity.
So they kind of implied that, oh yes, you could come back, but then that would get erased and no one would remember it when the version got, you know, the version control, you know, initiated and remerged the timeline.
Right.
So I guess it kind of comes down to, well, maybe we couldn't win for everybody, but at least this was the whatever version she decided to do. Now, it occurred to me at one point, and I don't know if I believe this, and I don't know if this was in any intention, but, you know, her body pops out because of the thing that, and they told her about this, that, you know, if something comes in, it has to come back out.
Right.
And well, so
it has to return to the same space-time.
Right. So, you know, she's the one who's killed, so her body pops back out later just because it has to do that, even though she was dead, and that's how they kind of prove that it actually, time travel works.
Minus a tooth enamel.
Right. Right. So part of me is thinking, did she do this with the intention of, you know, helping her husband prove that the work actually worked? Or was that just sort of a random side effect of what happened?
I don't think that her intentions actually kind of matter in the end. I don't think she had very complicated intentions. She was just going to go back and make everything okay.
Well, right.
Okay for Philip and Sean.
Right.
At the expense of her own life.
Yes, although she might not have seen it as a self-sacrifice. We don't actually know.
Maybe she was really intending for, what is it, Aunt Alicia to be the one who dies.
She's like, she liked Alicia at that point.
But we're all happy.
Yes. Right, yes. Yeah,
she did drug her, but she liked her.
Yes, and well, because I don't, like I was saying, that occurred to me as like something that maybe was an intent, but I kind of don't think that really was the intent. It's just like that was like a possible interpretation of the events was that she's like, well, this will help him prove that it actually, you know, exists because of the way physics works or something.
Well, I think you may be doing something similar to what they were doing at the end of the book, which was saying, well, She must have been sent back in time to save us from this horrible
other reality. She volunteered to do this thing and not like she snuck in, you know, to do that, but...
I'll be back.
Right, exactly. All right, well, anything else?
I did appreciate the fact that the source code for the CVD was so incredibly complex and spaghetti coded that it did remind me of my former workplace.
Our former workplace.
Yeah, my analogy at the time for that was, hey, I painted the fender blue. Why did the carburetor stop working? Seems so apt now.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think it's time for us to go back in time and make this podcast never to have ever happened.
Or make it more awesome.
Even better. So anyway, if you like this podcast or even feel neutral in a non-negative way, we'd appreciate a subscribe and a review on iTunes. You can also give us a like on our Facebook page where you can find out about upcoming episodes. You can search for us on Twitter or you can send us an email at sf3podcast@gmail.com. Our theme song is Love Amplifier by Safeword, available on Magnatune. And until next time, we are Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi.